Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Stephen L. Kent, Rogue Clone. Narrated by Ken Jackson. With performances by Thomas Keegan, Colleen Delaney, Drew Copus, Tony Nam, Gary Tells, Tim Getman, Dylan Lynch, James Konacek, Daniel Sontag, Christopher Sheeran, Scott McCormick, Evan Casey, Alexander Strain, Richard Rowan, Lily Beacon, Danny Gavigan, Tim Carlin, Mort Shelby, Johan Detweiler, Jessica Lefko, Christopher Graybill, Terrence Aselford, Elliot Dash, Nanette Savard, Kimberly Gilbert. Book 6, The Clone Empire. Earth date, July 16, AD 2517. Location, Terrano. Galactic position, Scutum Crux Arm.
You can't possibly be serious about attacking Earth.
Why not?
The rising sun might have been a molten copper penny and the sky around it made of gold. The financial district of Norristown no longer bristled with business. War had turned the city into a wasteland. Colonel Philo Hollingsworth and I stood on a hill overlooking the ruins of what once had been the government center for an entire galactic arm, the Scutum Crux Arm.
You're 80,000 light years from Earth. You only have 2,200 Marines under your command, and every last specking one of them blames you for starting the war in the first place. No, let's just be honest. They hate you.
My engineers don't hate me. I had a 1,000-man corps of naval engineers on the planet along with my Marines.
Don't tell me you think they like you.
I didn't mean they liked me. I just wanted to keep our census accurate.
You don't even have any ships left in your fleet. Face it, Harris. The war is over. You lost.
I might have some ships left. Hollingsworth rolled his eyes and said nothing. In the 2 months since the Earth fleet had attacked Terrano, there had been no word from our fleet. Three cranes struggled as they pulled slabs and columns from the wreckage. I walked over to Lieutenant Scott Mars, my chief engineer. Are you sure your cranes can handle that much weight?
It's fine, sir.
That column isn't too heavy?
Look, General, you worry about the tanks, and I'll take care of the cranes and bulldozers.
He did not come across as hostile, but that did not mean he respected me. Scott Mars had adopted an evangelical lifestyle. He testified about being born again, a claim that the rest of us did not take seriously. He was a clone, just like the rest of us. He could not be born again because he wasn't really born the first time. Mars was universally perky and ready to please, and we got used to him saying praise this and praise that. Everybody liked Mars. The hallelujah chorus was just part of having him around. Seeing that Lieutenant Mars had everything under control, I returned to Hollingsworth to restart our conversation.
There are 15 fighter carriers floating up there. What happened to the other 21?
Even if they got away, they wouldn't have gotten very far. Not with those new UA ships chasing after them. Just for the sake of argument, let's say you have 21 carriers waiting for you. What are you going to do with them? The Unified smashed us when we had 36 carriers. They'll just smash us again.
They didn't smash us down here. We beat their Marines.
You dropped a building on them. You buried them. Next time, they won't be so quick to chase you into an underground garage.
Below us, two of the cranes worked in tandem to hoist a long stretch of outer wall from the ruins of that underground garage.
It doesn't look stable.
You better be grateful for that. We buried 3,000 Unified Authority Marines down there. If it were stable, they might have dug themselves out.
Mars jogged over to join us.
We've dug an entrance, sir. I've got a team ready. Is there anything you want to tell them before I send them in?
No.
Down among the wreckage, five men in soft-shelled armor ventured into the gap that the cranes had opened.
Okay, if you don't mind my asking, sir, do we really need to do this?
I want a better look at their armor.
We're pulling them out to look at their armor?
You worry about the engineering.
I'll worry about the ethics.
The General wants to examine their armor for weaknesses.
Why does he care about that?
He wants to know how to get through their armor before his return engagement.
Are they coming back?
Nope. Harris wants to invade Earth.
You're joking, right?
Lieutenant Mars's expression suddenly shifted. Something he'd heard over his headset caught his attention.
They've got one, sir.
Are you certain it's one of theirs?
It's a UA Marine.
Are his shields still up?
No, sir. The suit's gone dark.
Is the armor in one piece?
Good as new.
Let's have a look at it. A few minutes later, two engineers came out of the ground carrying the dead Marine. They brought the body over so I could examine it. Without the glowing skin of its shields, the dead man's armor looked very much like the combat armor my men wore.
The visor's cracked.
Where? That? That's not a crack, it's a scratch.
I told you, perfect condition.
As long as the visor works.
You have your orders.
Well, we're getting four more sets.
Five more suits. And those five suits had better be perfect, or I'll send them back.
Five suits in perfect condition, aye.
Nearly an hour passed before the engineers returned with their next specimen. I examined the armor. There was no dust on the seals around the shoulder plates. One of Mars' engineers had taken a helmet from one cadaver and added it to the body armor of another. Clever. I pretended not to notice the switch.
Send it to the labs.
Aye, aye, sir.
And Lieutenant? Tell your men to stop with the mix-and-match armor. Next time, I'll send it back.
Yes, sir.
Mars called down my orders as his men loaded the body onto a jeep and left for Fort Sebastian.
Looks like we got us an audience.
Damn. A small crowd of locals had gathered around the chain-link fence that we built around the area as a perimeter.
Maybe you should have a word with them.
Don't tell them you're planning to invade Earth. You wouldn't want to upset them.
Just get me the specking armor.
I walked to the fence where the locals waited.
This is a flagrant violation of our agreement.
Right Reverend Colonel Ellery Doctorow stood a few inches from the chain link, his arms folded across his chest, an angry scowl on his face.
I'm not here for weapons.
I don't care why you are here. Pull your men out and leave immediately.
We're exhuming bodies, not weapons. You can hang around and observe if you like. You won't see any weapons come out of that hole, just bodies and armor.
Lieutenant Mars trotted over with an update.
We found another one.
How's his armor?
The legs were crushed. The helmet's perfect.
Take the legs from the first guy you found, the one with the cracked visor.
Praise Jesus! God is good! He says we can keep it.
Why are you digging up dead Marines?
He's preparing for the invasion.
Is the Earth fleet coming back?
It's the other way around. He's planning on invading them.
That's not funny.
He's not joking.
You're planning to invade Earth?
Yes.
Well, if that's the case, Harris, dig away. If it gets you off my planet, I'm all for it.
A short while later, Lieutenant Mars' engineers broke through to the third level of the underground garage, and the work went quickly.
They've found a motherload of munitions.
Leave it.
Are you sure you want to do that, sir?
I looked back at Ellery Doctorow and his militia lined up along the fence.
Leave it. I gave them my word.
Yes, sir. We don't want to tempt the locals.
The engineers said something. I could not hear what.
Yeah, it's the golden rule. Yeah, you know, arm thy neighbor as thyself. We don't get the weapons, and neither do they.
Seeing that our work was done, and that we had not exhumed any weapons, Doctorow and his militia returned to their homes. Hollingsworth joined Mars and me as we watched Doctorow and company load into their trucks and cars.
Specking anti-synthetic pricks.
He's not so bad. Now, his wife. A few minutes later, Hollingsworth and I climbed into our jeep and headed back to Fort Sebastian. He joined me in my commandeered office at Fort Sebastian.
So, what do you think they will call the war?
Who are you talking about?
You know, 100 years from now. What do you think people will call the war?
I don't think anyone will remember it ever happened.
Sure they will. Maybe they'll call it a revolutionary war. Isn't it a revolutionary war when you fight for independence?
It wasn't a revolution. It's not a revolution unless you win.
Well, okay. Maybe we didn't win. But neither did they. I don't see any unified authority guard towers, do you?
We got crushed. We didn't win shit. They crushed us.
Okay, so we didn't exactly win, but we didn't totally lose. Maybe that makes it a civil war, like the American Civil War.
It wasn't a civil war either, sir. It wasn't important enough to be a civil war. I bet the local media on Earth didn't even report the battle.
They reported it. They lost a decorated war hero. They didn't have any choice. People notice when someone like Ted Moreland goes missing.
They'll just announce that he died in a training exercise.
You're probably right.
Damn right they'll say that. That's all this was to them, just a training exercise. It wasn't a civil war, and it sure as hell wasn't a revolutionary war.
Well, maybe it was a coup.
Don't flatter yourself. A year from now, no one remembers it.
Oh, they'll remember it. The Unified Authority lost 23 ships. They lost 3 fighter carriers, 5 battleships, and 3,000 Marines. Damn straight they'll remember it. Anytime the Navy loses 3 fighter carriers, it's a big deal.
A big battle, but a minor war.
But it was a war.
Okay, so it was a war. And the war is over, sir. Unless they come back to finish us, your war is dead.
Maybe you're right. Only time will tell.
Maybe I'm right about what?
About the war being on hold.
I didn't say it was on hold. I said it was dead.
Ava, my significant other come girlfriend, and I ate dinner with Ellery Doctorow and his wife every month. It was never a friendly occasion. Doctorow considered me and my Marines a relic of Unified Authority intervention and wanted us to leave. As far as he and everyone else knew, we were landlocked on his planet.
Ellery tells me you want to attack Earth?
Wason, are you planning attacks without telling me?
Sarah was Ellery Doctorow's common-law wife. Ava was more like my fiancé than my wife. I got the better deal.
You need to keep a close eye on that man of yours. He's planning a war behind your back.
That's my Wason.
What happened to your cane?
I think I've outgrown it.
Congratulations on your remarkable recovery. Your doctor gave you even chances of survival 2 months ago. Now you're walking around without a cane.
Doctor O lifted his wine glass for a toast.
To what should we attribute your amazing recovery? Good genes, I suppose?
Pretending not to notice the insult, I smiled and drank my wine.
I even went jogging this morning. Nothing too ambitious, just a couple of miles.
Jogging? I'm glad to hear it. Now that you are up and around, have you put any thought into finding a new location for your base? I think it's high time you moved.
A new location? Washington, D.C. comes to mind.
I leaned over the table, my eyes locked on Dr. O's.
I know what happened to my fleet.
How far did they get?
They made it. They survived.
What do you mean, they made it?
They escaped. They're fine.
I did not know whether or not they were fine, but I did know that they had escaped.
Where did they go?
That's classified.
How soon will they return?
Classified.
But you're in contact with them? You're making plans to leave?
Not in the foreseeable future.
Oh, but General, you can't possibly attack Earth from Terra, no? It's too far away. Wouldn't that weaken your attack?
Where do you suggest I launch from?
Anywhere but here.
We don't have any place else.
Attack from wherever your fleet disappeared to. Where did you say they went?
I didn't.
You brought the Earth fleet down on us once already. I won't allow you to do that again.
I wondered how he planned to stop me, but did not ask. I also wondered why I tolerated the pontificating old windbag.
That is so brave. They nearly annihilated you just 2 months ago, and you're already preparing to fight him again.
Ava did not join in the discussion. She listened to Ellery and Sarah, but kept her eyes on me. No emotion showed on her face. And that was how the night ended. Doctorow angling to get my Marines off his planet, his wife praising me for my self-destructive spirit, and Ava watching in silence.
It's getting late. Perhaps we should call an end to the evening.
Sarah stood, started gathering dirty plates, and paused to look at Ava.
It's so nice to see you again.
At least let me help clear the table.
As they went through the monthly ritual of Ava's offering to help with the dishes and Sarah's declining, Ellery Doctorow led me toward the door.
How much do you really know?
I know they got away, and I know how.
Do you have any way of reaching them?
Maybe.
Ava came to join us, and it was time to leave. We drove the short distance to Ava's house in silence, then went inside.
When were you going to tell me?
I was going to tell you.
Are they back?
Is who back?
The ships. Your missing ships. Are they back?
No.
But they are coming back.
I followed Ava to the master bedroom. Her clothes were coming off.
I don't know.
You don't know?
I haven't made contact.
Honey, from the way you were talking tonight, I would have thought you'd moved in with them.
Yeah, well, Doctorow wants me out of here, and he'll be a lot easier to work with when he thinks I'm planning to leave.
She pulled off her blouse and disappeared into the bathroom.
Are you leaving?
Not without you.
She came back into the doorway, this time dressed only in her bra and her panties.
Who says you can't teach an old dog new tricks? Harris, you rang the right bell. Now come and claim your reward.
The time had come to lay my cards out on the table. Hollingsworth and I dressed in combat armor for this excursion. Lieutenant Mars came in a soft shell. Mars, Hollingsworth, and I sat inside the kettle.
General Harris, what exactly are we here for?
I'm going to show you how the fleet escaped.
No shit. How'd they do it?
I'll demonstrate when we get there. Mars, were you able to get the shields running on that armor?
Yes, sir. All we had to do was recharge the batteries.
And?
The shielding is worthless.
Well, what do you mean by worthless? Are you saying it's weak? It wasn't weak when we fought them. We hit those sons of bitches with rockets and grenades.
My particle beam pistol didn't get through. I shot a man at point-blank range.
They should have kept shooting. Those shields are just for show. Do you want to know what they used as a power source? A battery pack about the size of my finger. Well, I suppose it's the age-old trade-off, power versus mobility.
Like every other engineer I knew, he got excited and started spouting jargon. He went on for a couple of minutes like that, babbling as if he had actually gone to engineering school.
In a perfect setting, they might have gotten 45 minutes out of their shields. Every time you hit them, it causes the power to spike. It doesn't matter if you hit them with a missile or a spit wad, the power in their shield spikes. Do you know how long those shields would hold up in a rainstorm? We tried it. We powered up a suit and splashed it with a hose. The battery died in 8 minutes. Most of their shields failed 3 minutes after you brought that garage down on their heads.
Wait, some of those guys were alive for weeks. If their shields gave out, why weren't they crushed?
You only crushed the laggards, the ones who were still on the first and second levels of the garage. The lower levels did not cave in, especially on the fourth and fifth. The men on those levels weren't buried. They were trapped. If they'd had food and oxygen, they'd still be alive today.
Interesting. So we can drain the battery by hitting them with a barrage?
Yeah, more or less.
Do you have any idea how long the armor would stand up to a particle beam?
8 minutes. It doesn't matter what you hit it with. There's a power surge, and the battery goes dry after 8 minutes.
Good to know.
That's 8 minutes of prolonged exposure. You'd need to hit your target with a continuous wave.
Does that include sound waves?
Yeah, that might do it. We didn't try that, but it probably would work.
What might work?
Using sonic waves to deplete the batteries.
You sneaky bastard.
My pilot spoke to us over the intercom.
General, we're in position.
How close?
1,500 miles, sir.
Give us a moment to suit up. Helmets on, gentlemen. For today's demonstration, we will be opening the rear hatch.
After we pulled on our helmets, I contacted my pilot via the interlink.
Ready.
He vented the air from the kettle. Once the oxygen had been evacuated, he opened the massive iron doors at the rear of the ship, revealing a wide field of stars and empty space.
You brought us out here to see this? There's nothing here. It's what you don't see that counts.
I picked up a handheld rocket launcher.
Lower the rear shields in 10, 9, 8.
I continued the count in my head.
There's more going on out here than meets the eye. Watch.
What does this have to do with the fleet?
Without answering, I aimed the rocket out the rear of the ship. 3, 2, 1.
Shield up. What is this about?
The explosion took place about 500 miles away, straight ahead of us in the vast emptiness.
What was that? What just happened? Gentlemen, we're at the edge of a battlefield. The area around us is crowded with broken ships and debris, and yet the space we are facing is almost entirely empty. Do either of you have any idea why no ships entered this zone?
You said almost empty. What do you mean by almost?
There's a broadcast station in the center of it.
A broadcast station? Are you saying Warshaw broadcasted the fleet?
That can't be. The broadcast network was shut down during the MOGAT wars. That was years ago.
The broadcast engines weren't broken. They just needed power. Warshaw must have installed generators on the station.
That's my guess.
If he got the station running, he could have made it out with hundreds of ships.
21 carriers, 72 battleships, and who knows how many frigates and cruisers.
The visor in my combat armor had equipment for surveillance, reconnaissance, and battle, such as lenses that could illuminate the darkness, see over long distances, and detect heat. Lieutenant Mars's soft-shelled armor had an entirely different set of lenses designed for engineers.
The current out there is off the charts. How far are we from the broadcast station?
1,500 miles.
And no ships got any closer than this?
Not much.
Does the field go all the way around the station?
As far as I can tell, it forms a perfect sphere.
His Warshaw must have supercharged the broadcast engines to create a hot zone.
If you say so.
No, it doesn't make sense. Why didn't the Unifieds blast the station?
They would have destroyed the station the same way the Mogats destroyed the Mars broadcast station.
No, they couldn't. They couldn't hit it with a torpedo. You saw what just happened to that rocket.
So they would have used a particle beam or a laser.
I handed Hollingsworth a shoulder-held laser cannon.
Be my guest.
What about our shields?
Pilot, lower the shield.
Hollingsworth aimed the cannon out the back of the transport. The silver-red beam disappeared only a few hundred feet from the ship.
How'd you do that? The current from the broadcast station disassembled it.
It what?
Disassembled it. Pulled it apart. We used to communicate across the galaxy sending laser signals over the broadcast network. The current from the broadcast station must translate light waves.
So what?
We fire a laser at the station and it comes out in another galactic arm? Not without an encoded address built into the signal to specify where it is supposed to go. Without an address, the waves stay broken apart.
Have you tried contacting the people on the other side? What do you suggest? Shouting into it? Maybe we could float a tin cup on a really long string into the zone and see if someone picks up on the other side.
The pilot closed the transport doors.
Why didn't the Unified send ships in after them?
Oh, you wouldn't want to enter a hot zone unless you had a ship designed for network travel. The current from a zone like this would overload the engines in a self-broadcasting ship.
Well, what would happen if one of their ships did go in?
It would cause a massive explosion.
How massive?
Massive?
You mean like a nuclear explosion?
Nuclear bombs come in all sizes, don't they? I suspect it would be the equivalent of a very small nuclear device.
A dark emotion seemed to come over Hollingsworth. The excitement left his face. He sat in the shadows, quiet and sullen.
I don't see how this changes anything. We know how they got away, but we can't go after them. I mean, what are we going to do? Put a message in a bottle and toss it through the zone?
Not a message in a bottle. I'm going to fly a ship into the hot zone.
You're joking, right? Unless you have a ship we don't know about, the only thing you have that flies is a transport.
Yeah, he's right. Only an idiot would enter a broadcast zone in a transport.
I held up my hands, palms out. No working ships up my sleeves. But there's a whole fleet out there.
You mean the wrecks?
One man's wreckage may well be another man's pan-galactic barge.
You're gonna ride a wreck into a broadcast zone. That's suicide.
You have any better ideas?
No, sir, I don't.
I'll work out the details.
It took Mars and his engineers more than a month to work out the kinks. That meant that a month had passed since the night I promised Ava I would take her with me when I left Terrano. I meant what I said when I made the promise. But now that I knew the gory details, I needed to renege. I arrived at Ava's house just after sunset. The last fibers of sunlight streaked across the sky, making the clouds look like the embers of a dying fire. Ava looked beautiful. Her hair, which she frequently wore in an organized tangle of locks and tresses, hung down over her back. She wore a red dress that left her shoulders bare and showed just the right preview of cleavage.
I come bearing gifts.
I held up a six-pack of beers I was able to commandeer.
They're even cold.
You know how to make a girl feel special.
Is everything okay?
We better eat while the food is hot and your beers are cold.
Her home was small but stylish. The dining table was about the right size for an end table. She had spread a white linen cloth across the top and wedged a candle between our plates. I pulled her chair out for her, though I was not sure she wanted me to.
There's a rumor going around about you leaving Terrano.
Really? Who's spreading it? I hope you're not listening to Sarah.
I didn't hear it from Sarah. I heard about it from Julie Neberger.
Who is that?
She lives a few doors down.
Is she dating one of my Marines?
No.
Well, you can't take anything she says very seriously. She doesn't know what she's talking about.
She heard about it from Rachel Johnson. Rachel heard Sarah and Ellery joking about you leaving at a bridge party.
I already knew Sarah Doctorow had a big mouth. By that time, I had confided the information about the broadcast zone to Doctorow.
I see. Did they happen to give any specifics?
No. All she knew was that you found a working broadcast station.
I see.
Are you going after the missing ships?
I think so.
Julie says they're not going to let you back on Terra now once you leave.
Who's not going to let me back on?
Ellery, I guess.
Don't worry about it. He'd need an air force to stop me. All he has is a civilian militia armed with pop guns.
I don't think it's just Ellery. I think Hollingsworth is with him.
Hollingsworth?
Wason, if you come back, they might shoot you down.
Not likely. Not Hollingsworth. He might ignore me, but he wouldn't shoot at me.
What if he and Dr. O want to take over the planet?
Now there's an unholy alliance. Ellery Dr. O doesn't want to conquer Terrano. He wants to be elected king. He's an idealist, not a dictator, and he's not going to tag team with Philo Hollingsworth. It's not just me. Dr. O thinks every Marine is a serpent in his Garden of Eden.
That doesn't scare you?
No.
Wason, tell me the truth. Are you leaving soon?
Yes.
How are you going to do it?
It's just like Dr. O said. There's a working broadcast station. I'm going to ride a busted ship through it.
What do you mean by busted?
That's classified.
How busted is it, Wason?
It was destroyed during the battle with the Earth Fleet.
But you have it running now?
Not exactly.
Not exactly? If you haven't repaired the ship, how are you going to fly it?
Ava, that's classified information.
Classified? We're not at war. Who are you trying to hide it from?
Scott Mars is going to seal me in a derelict ship and launch it toward the station.
Have you even tested it to see if it's safe?
Why don't we have this out after dinner?
Have you flown anything else into the station?
A couple of grenades.
How about something with people in it? You have to send another ship through before you go through yourself.
How will we know if it made it through?
Maybe you should send a guinea pig first to see if it's safe.
I suppose that's me. Launching a derelict ship into the broadcast zone required more planning than I had anticipated. The first problem was finding a ship that was solid enough to stand the stresses of the electrical current. It had to be one of ours. The Unified Authority ships were closer to the zone, but they were all self-broadcasting, which meant they lacked the kind of insulation needed to keep me safe. As we mapped the battlefield, a pattern quickly emerged. While we had lost almost three times as many ships as the Unified Authority in the battle, all of the wrecks around the broadcast zone were from the Earth Fleet. They had all been destroyed from the inside out. Apparently, they had entered the outer reaches of the broadcast zone and exploded when exposed to the current flowing from the broadcast station. Mars held a briefing to explain the situation. He used a three-dimensional holographic map to show the area.
Okay, these ships marked in blue are UA ships. Our job would be a whole lot easier if we could send you in one of these ships, but it wouldn't be safe.
What if you sealed me in?
What do you mean?
What if you took tiles off the hull of an SC fleet ship and sealed them around one of these ships? Would that be enough to protect me?
Well, if it were that easy, we could just weld some armor to a working transport and you'd have flight controls. The inadequacy goes deeper. It's structural. Since we can't launch you in a UA ship, we need to clear them out from between your ship and the zone.
Inspecting the display, I saw what he meant. The battle had apparently taken place on an almost two-dimensional plane, with the Unified Authority ships forming a solid wall between the battlefield and the hot zone. Can you drag my ship around them?
And Jesus wept. No offense, General. But your grasp of physics never ceases to amaze me. We'll be lucky if we can get you moving at all. Turns and course corrections are out of the question. You're going to be in a great big ship being propelled by tiny ships. Newton's second law, mass force acceleration, you are familiar with Sir Isaac Newton, right, sir? An object in motion, equal and opposite reaction. Once we build up enough velocity to drive your wreck toward the zone, you will be traveling in a straight line. If something is in your way, we need to move it out of the way or break it. Those are the only options. Clear a path or scrap this mission.
Why can't you just haul the flotsam and jetsam out of the way?
It's a matter of size.
He fingered his remote device, and the holographic display zoomed in on the wrecks, blocking the route to the broadcast zone.
These five ships here are UA fighter carriers. They are 3,300 feet long and 800 feet wide. We can't exactly tie a rope to their gunnels and tow them into port.
He played with his remote again, and this time an orange light appeared around three ships.
These are UA battleships, the new ones. They're 2,600 feet long and 500 feet wide. Three of these ships rammed into each other and got tangled. We think we can clear a path for you by breaking these ships apart. If it doesn't work...
We'll need to scrub the mission.
Probably so, sir.
I'd made a tactical error when I told Ellery Doctorow about the broadcast zone so early in the game. With each passing week, Doctorow became more insistent that I leave and take my military with me. After 6 weeks, he acted up. My communications console woke me from a near sleep.
This better be good.
General, someone's breaking into the armory.
Do we know who?
I sent a squad to investigate.
What did they find?
I've lost contact with them, sir.
I turned on the light and slid off my rack.
Muster a single company. I want them dressed in combat armor and loaded on trucks in 5 minutes.
Won't we need more men? What if...
Put the rest of the base on alert.
But what if...
You have your orders.
Yes, sir.
15 minutes later, I sat next to Hollingsworth as we rode in the back of a transport with 25 Marines around us.
Has your patrol reported in?
No response, sir. The bastards must have hit him.
Must have.
I put on my helmet and tried to listen in on my men's conversations over the interlink, but heard nothing. For a moment, I thought something might be wrong with my equipment. I removed my helmet and stared into it.
I'm not linking. It's like my helmet went deaf.
As I stared into my helmet, the truck slowed to a stop.
General Harris! You better get up here!
I pushed through the crowd, making my way towards the driver, and I noticed that all of the men had removed their helmets.
What is it?
General, I tried to contact you over the interlink, sir, but I could not get a signal.
Somebody's jamming the signal.
Yes, sir. There's an overturned Jeep about a quarter mile up the road from here.
I scanned the road ahead and saw no signs of people. I pulled off my helmet.
We're hiking in from here. Keep your helmets on until I give the signal to remove them. There may be snipers out there. If there are, I want to see them before they hit us.
As we got out of the truck, I sent a group of four to go investigate the Jeep. They returned in short order, with the four-man team from the Jeep. I spoke to the patrol leader.
What happened?
They spiked the road.
Was anybody hurt?
The Jeep's in bad shape.
The terrain was mostly flat, though much of it was buried under mounds of debris. We secured the area quickly, then moved forward. We reached the Jeep. It lay on its side, all of its wheels shredded. Somebody had gouged a 2-inch-deep trench across the road, then filled it with spikes. I knelt beside the spikes and tried to pull one out.
Bastards. You think the militia did this?
Why don't you ask your pal, Doctoro? I hear you two are tight.
I stood and looked off across the landscape. If the militia had time to set these spikes, they'd had time to set up more surprises. None of the traps would be lethal, just something to get our attention.
See if you can contact Fort Sebastian. I want to know if they've seen anything.
He tried and came back a moment later.
Nothing, sir. Maybe we should send a man back to tell him what's going on.
Not yet. Not until I know what's out here.
Yes, sir.
I put on my helmet and searched the area using night for day lenses. Then I switched to heat vision. The lenses showed me nothing but a barren landscape giving off very little heat. As I thought about it, I became more convinced that Doctoro would not sanction a firefight. He would not send snipers, but he might have had his demolitions experts set some traps. Doctoro had a couple of retired Navy SEALs among his troops. They had top-notch demolitions training and field experience. While the rest of us waited by the overturned Jeep, a team went out to look for IEDs. They came back in short order, having found nothing. We pushed ahead. Using the telescopic lenses in my visor, I located the remains of the fence we'd erected around the armory as a perimeter. They might have used trucks or tractors. Someone had torn the chain link aside, leaving only the skeleton of a badly twisted frame standing. I allowed my men to approach the edge of the grounds, then had them stop. I searched for heat, then holes, then radiation. The area came up clean.
Have your men secure the area. No one gets in or out.
Aye, aye, sir.
The rest of you, spread out and look for holes, traps, bombs, tunnels, cameras, anything. I want to know if anyone has been digging or if this is a wild goose chase.
Well, what about snipers?
If you find one, shoot him.
Yes, sir.
I looked across the area. Somebody had planted a row of 6 flagpoles along the far edge of the field, just beyond the wreckage of the underground garage. Oddly shaped black flags hung from each of the poles. I went for a closer look, putting on my helmet as I walked, skirting around the wreckage. As I stepped closer, I saw that it was not flags that hung from the poles, but antique gas masks. The masks were not so much a warning as a message. At the base of the poles sat a small silver box, no larger than a beer bottle. I approached the box for a closer look, already afraid that I would not like whatever I found. It might have been a small canister filled with any one of a million deadly gases or germs. It could also have been a bomb. It wasn't. It was a device for jamming communications. I pulled my M27. I contacted Hollingsworth using the interlink.
Contact the fort. Tell them to call off the alert. You got the link working.
I suspected we would find a bomb or some other weapon back at the base, but it would be disarmed or maybe just an empty shell. The locals were letting me know that it was high time for the Marines to leave their town. I only hoped Hollingsworth realized that the message was meant for him as much as me. Ellery Doctorow dropped by Fort Sebastian at my request later that morning. I met him in front of the fort, near a parked truck. Inside the truck, there was a 15-foot-long aluminum canister. Noxium was stenciled across the side of the canister in turkey red paint. 6 antique gas masks hung from a rack at the back of the truck. Someone left us a special delivery last night.
Anything in particular?
I pulled one of the gas masks from the rack. Draping it over my left hand, I held it out so that Doctorow could get a better look at it.
Know what this is?
It looks like an old-fashioned breathing apparatus.
Yes, it is. I'd never seen one of these before, so I looked it up on the media link. This one isn't for soldiers. It was made for firefighters. Marines don't use them at all, of course. We have airtight armor with a built-in rebreather. Firefighters don't use these masks anymore either. Did you know that?
I wasn't aware of that.
Nope. They use combat armor. Marine combat armor. At least, they used to. See, most Marines come in one size, being clones, so the armor comes in one size as well. They custom make armor for officers, but that's expensive. Really expensive. So firefighters had to use standard issue enlisted gear. You know how they got around the single size issue? They hired retired servicemen. You know, clones. Makes sense, doesn't it? They can't do that now, though, because they're out of clones. Now they probably use natural borns. Yeah, I suppose they could make robots, but that's even more expensive than custom-fitted gear. It's so specking.
All very fascinating, General, but there's no call for profanity.
Oh. Sorry about that. I got carried away. Do you know what this is?
I pointed to the canister as I slung the gas mask back on the rack.
I'd say someone was trying to send you a message.
Yes, indeed. It would appear so. Some of the boys and I went out on the town last night, and we found this waiting for us when we returned home. Fortunately, the canister was empty.
That is fortunate. As I understand it, noxium gas makes quite a mess.
Quite a mess. Quite a mess, indeed. In fact, it's so messy that these gas masks would have done nothing to protect us. Even combat armor is useless against this kind of gas. Did you know that?
I think I have heard something along that line.
One of my old platoon sergeants had some men who were killed by noxium. Do you know how he got their bodies out of the armor? He washed them out with a fire hose. No joke. He said the noxium ate their bodies until all that was left was this flesh-colored jelly, sort of a coagulated goo that washed out in clumps.
That is all very fascinating, but...
Now, a canister this size, if it had been full, it would have had enough gas to wipe out half of Norristown. You'd have been cleaning out Fort Sebastian with a fire hose. But you'd also have needed to hose out every apartment, house, and car from Ford Street to West Angle, almost half of town.
Is that so? I heard noxium gas evaporates so quickly that it doesn't spread.
Oh, you see now, that's just a myth. The truth is, noxium doesn't evaporate at all. It dies. It's not really a gas. It's a cloud of microscopic organisms, voracious little bastards that'll bore through anything they can sink their teeth into.
There's no cause to use...
The little bastards die quickly when you release them in small concentrations. Unleash a pint or two, and they die in a matter of seconds. That's why noxium is such an effective tool for capturing enemy strongholds. You just shoot a few noxium shells over the wall, and the gas turns the occupants into goo, then you capture their base and wash the enemy out with a hose. But that's with a small amount. Maybe the amount of gas you get from a half-gallon shell. With a big batch like this, the microbes insulate each other from the atmosphere, and the cloud doesn't go away. If this much had spilled, the cloud would have spread all the way over to your part of town. My Marines wouldn't have been the only ones receiving the message. Sarah and Ava would have gotten it as well.
How very fortunate for all of us that the canister was empty.
You wouldn't happen to have any idea who left us this message?
I wouldn't know anything about it, General. I am a peaceable man.
Ellery, I'm not accusing anyone.
I don't think it was meant as a threat. Whoever left it, they probably meant it as a reminder.
Probably so.
I happen to agree with whoever did this. It's high time you left. You and your men have outstayed your welcome.
Does that go for all of us? Colonel Hollingsworth is under the impression that you only object to me.
A simple misunderstanding. Don't take this personally, General Harris, but I don't really like having a military presence in my city. Armies are a tool of intimidation, and I don't believe governments should be in the business of intimidation.
But you don't mind my Corps of Engineers.
What do you mean?
If you are evicting me and my men, I will need to take my engineers with me.
How are you going to rebuild Norristown without them?
I would prefer for you to leave them. They make a valuable contribution.
They're military clones, just like the rest of us. They came off the same assembly line and grew up in the same orphanages. The only difference between Scott Mars and Philo Hollingsworth is their training. When I give the order to leave, Mars and his men go with the rest of us.
Are you threatening me, General?
Not me. I'm just answering your message. After clearing the air, Dr. O and I went to the McGraw building, the building that served as a headquarters for the Corps of Engineers. I had scheduled a briefing to take place. Hollingsworth and several of his lieutenants attended the briefing as well. I have every intention of leaving Terrano as quickly as possible. I want to get off this specking rock, the sooner the better.
Yes, you said that 2 months ago, General, but you're still here.
Then you will be glad to know why I called for this little meeting. Looking around the room, I saw that none of us had gotten much sleep. Thanks to the early morning call to the armory, Hollingsworth and I had not returned to base until nearly 0500 hours. Mars had been on alert, guarding the base. Dr. O looked tired as well. His eyes were badly bloodshot. When Dr. O saw that he was surrounded by military men, he found a quiet corner where he could lean against the wall and watch the presentation unnoticed. I ditched him and drifted over to Hollingsworth.
I brought your pal.
We're not pals.
Lieutenant Mars booted up his holographic display, and we gathered around him for a closer look. Mars was a smart officer. He waited for me to get things started. When I asked him how things were progressing, he explained why everything was going wrong.
Do you have any concept about the sheer mass of a battleship? We're talking about 130,000 tons of metal spread across 300,000 cubic feet.
Why are you giving us a lesson on mass, Lieutenant?
Because the only way we're going to launch General Harris into that broadcast zone is by sealing him inside a battleship.
Why are you choosing a big ship? Wouldn't it be easier to send him off in a frigate?
He'd never break through the ships blocking the zone. The smaller ships don't have enough mass.
Mars pointed to the wall of derelict ships. Since our last meeting, the problem had gone from difficult to intractable. Hoping to blow the ships into tiny fragments, we talked about sending engineers to rig wrecks with charges. As far as I knew, he hadn't actually sent anyone.
Breakthrough? I thought we were going to clear a path.
It doesn't look like that's going to work, sir. We've tried conventional charges. We experimented with a small tactical weapon as well.
You nuked him?
Yes, sir. We nuked one. The device blew the outer hull off the ship, but the decks and the structure remained in place.
But a battleship could ram through?
Mars did not get a chance to answer. Hearing the ease with which the discussion had switched to tactical weapons, Dr. O spoke up.
Where precisely did you get a nuclear weapon?
Maybe we dug it up while we were out collecting gas masks.
You son of a bitch! You raided the armory when you were pulling out those bodies!
There's no call for profanity, Reverend.
You lied! Bodies, you said. I'm just collecting bodies so I can examine the armor.
I wasn't lying. We only took bodies.
Then you went back afterward. You still went back on your word.
Last night was the first time I set foot past the fence since the day we dug up the armor. It was the first day any of us have been back, and we weren't the ones who tore down the fence.
Then where did you get a nuclear bomb?
Oh, that. I didn't need to raid the armory to get that. We have plenty of nukes right here in Fort Sebastian. Remember when I offered to salvage food and rations from those derelict ships? I figured since we were up there, we might as well restock our armory while we were at it. You wanted rations, I wanted rockets. We both made out.
You son of a...
You already said that.
What do you plan to do with those weapons, General? Are you planning on recapturing Terrano?
We both want the same thing. You want me off your planet, and I can't wait to leave.
But that didn't stop you from building your arsenal. Why stockpile weapons if you aren't planning a war?
I'm a Marine. Marines like things that are loud. It's all part of speaking softly and carrying a big stick.
This is unacceptable. This is an act of...
We didn't leave an empty canister outside your door last night. If we ever do leave you a message, you can bet that the canister won't be empty.
Now that everything was in the open, it was time to turn our attention back to the mission.
So you're suggesting that we light up the wrecks and bash through in a battleship?
Considering the situation, sir, that's the best we've come up with.
What are the odds of success?
General, there are so many variables, I can't even begin to guess. It's a matter of velocity. With the right speed and God's good grace, this should work.
It sounds like you've got everything you need. Which ship is going to carry Harris?
The display showed the entire battlefield, which was spread out over thousands of cubic miles of open space. With the camera panned so far out, The fighter carriers were indistinguishable from the fighters they carried. Everything was represented by tiny motes of light.
You really won't be able to see the ship from this angle.
He adjusted the display so that it zoomed in on the wreckage of a Scutum Crux fleet battleship.
I had originally thought we would use a smaller ship, maybe even a minesweeper. A minesweeper would only have about 1/10 the overall mass of his battleship. Setting a battleship in motion is going to be a challenge.
What do you have in mind?
General, sir, we're going to attach a fleet of transports to the hull of the ship and use them like booster rockets.
What about the men in the transports? What about the pilots?
Oh, no live pilots. Everything will be remote control. This mission involves guiding a battleship into a nuclear explosion. No one in his right mind would fly into a nuclear blast.
But that's what I'm doing. Nobody answered. The plan was to attach 30 remotely controlled transports to the hull of a derelict battleship to use as external rockets. No one had ever used transports to move a derelict battleship or anything of like size. Everything was theoretical, but Mars assured me that it would work. When you place your life in other men's hands, you want to know that they take their work seriously. The Corps of Engineers called their plan Operation Chastity Belt and referred to the battleship as Harris's tool. They probably took the mission seriously, but they were also enlisted men. Juvenile humor was part of their makeup. They had clever names for every element of the operation. Harris's tool, the battleship, would travel nearly 300 miles, gathering speed in a linear acceleration before poking Chastity's belt. The wall of destroyed Unified Authority ships blocked the way to Virginity, the hot zone. When the tool was precisely 47 miles from Chastity Belt, the engineers would fire a series of nuclear devices that would both damage and superheat the UA ships. But the blast would not destroy them. They labeled this part of the operation foreplay. Just as the negative 450 degree temperature of space would set in, turning the metal brittle, the tool would ram into the ships. If everything went right, the tool would hit with sufficient velocity to break through the barrier. Lieutenant Mars might have been counting on God's good grace, but he carefully calculated acceleration and timing as well. Without the proper velocity, I would not have the power to smash through the ships. My battleship, barge, battering ram would be wedge-shaped and wider from wing to wing than from bow to stern. This meant that I would have a better chance of survival traveling sideways, leading with the starboard wing, while I hid in the landing bay on the port side of the ship. I explained all of this to Sergeant Nobles.
It sounds like you're trying to kill yourself, sir.
Nobles was a trained transport pilot. Officially, I did not have a personal pilot. But when I took rides in transports, he generally flew the bird. We sat in the empty mess area of a vacant wing of Fort Sebastian. I wanted privacy as I explained the mission.
Then it may be a double suicide.
Oh, shit. You're asking me to come with you.
I need a pilot.
Please say this is a joke, General.
Once I get through to the other side, I'm going to need someone to fly the transport off the battleship.
You mean the tool?
Yeah, okay, the tool.
General, do you know where we'll be when we get to the other side?
I have no idea.
And you want me to come along for the ride? Are you ordering me to come?
I was hoping you would volunteer.
Have you asked for other volunteers?
There's no point placing additional lives in harm's way.
No, sir. Why would you want to put anyone else in danger?
You've been my pilot since they transferred me to the Scutum Crux fleet. I'd hate to go without you.
Since you put it that way, when do we leave?
Oh, our schedule. We leave within the hour.
Aye, sir, an hour. I'll go pack my things.
I didn't give my pilot time to have second thoughts, but I also secretly hoped for a delay. One man's delay is another man's reprieve. I had not yet told Ava that I was ready to leave. She knew about the mission, but she had no idea about my schedule. I went to visit her at work. She met me outside her building. We stood under the awning, standing in silence, watching the driving rain.
When are you leaving?
Now? I'm driving to the airfield from here.
That seems rather sudden. How long have you known you were leaving?
A week.
You don't give a girl much notice.
I thought maybe we could have lunch before I left.
Harris, it's 3 p.m.
I haven't eaten.
I have.
I looked in her eyes and knew that she understood what I wanted. Having run out of things to say, I fumbled for a moment, then decided to go for broke.
I could drive you home.
What about my car?
We could drive in separate cars.
I have classes.
I could not tell if the wall between us was because she had already moved on from me or if she wanted to protect herself. The last two men in her life had cast her aside. Maybe she built mental walls to insulate herself from pain. They were natural borns, and they had dropped her because she was a clone. She was a clone, and I was a clone. We were together because society had very little use for us. Then again, she was beautiful, and beautiful women seldom hurt for company.
I will come back.
She drew close to me. I felt her warm breath as she pressed her lips to my mouth.
Harris, you better come back.
I sat with Nobles in the cockpit of our transport, looking out of the main windshield. The airfield was little more than a landing strip with a couple of newly built hangars surrounded by a wall of chain link and razor wire. We had built guard towers in the corners of the fence to keep the locals out, but that was for show. No one manned the towers.
What's that?
Nobles pointed to the bright red switch one of Mars' engineers had installed over his throttle.
Oh, that? That fires the torpedo.
We need a torpedo?
It never hurts to be prepared.
Prepared for what, exactly?
Well, you know, there's no way of knowing where the broadcast will send us.
Sir, I don't...
Hear me out. Admiral Warshaw flew his ships through this broadcast zone. It's going to be safe. Did Warshaw strike you as having a death wish? If he used this zone to broadcast himself out, I'm betting it will send us someplace safe.
So where do you think we'll come out?
Where will we come out? I have no specking idea. But I can make an educated guess. When the top brass decided to eliminate the cloning program, they shipped off whatever clones were left to 12 of the outer fleets. Now, I don't know about you, but if I were Warshaw and I had the Earth fleet chasing after me, I'd send myself someplace where I could find reinforcements.
And the torpedo?
It's nuclear-tipped.
But it's just a precaution, right? We're not bringing it because we're going to fight aliens.
Just a precaution.
And we won't need it?
No. Probably not.
He thought about this, nodded, and pivoted his seat so that he faced the flight controls.
You're a brave man, sir. It takes a lot of nerve to decide to fly a nuke through a broadcast zone.
They used to do that all the time.
Those ships were sealed. You've got us riding in a speck and wreck.
He looked back to see if I was suitably panicked, then fired the thrusters and lifted off the ground.
Good thing you're comfortable around nuclear weapons.
We crossed back over Norristown, passing over barren streets and thriving neighborhoods. Off in the distance, I saw the three towers of the financial district, the boys' dorm, the girls' dorm, and the hospital. Only a few minutes had passed since Ava sent me away. She'd still be in that building. Was she thinking of me?
So if Warshaw broadcasted into wherever we're going, what's to say he stayed there? I mean, maybe he wasn't any safer there than he was over here. Maybe he got there, patched up another broadcast station, and took us fleet to the next stop.
As he asked this, Nobles took us out of the atmosphere.
And maybe the Earth fleet caught up to him on the other side.
It was entirely possible that we were broadcasting from one graveyard to another.
Oh, if it isn't a prodigal son, come for a visit.
Lieutenant Mars radioed into us as we slowed to a drift and floated toward the wreckage.
I was beginning to think you changed your mind.
This is Marine One. Do you have a target for us?
Marine One, I'll send over the coordinates.
We picked our way through the graveyard. Terrano, a giant blue-green and tawny globe, spun in one corner of our vision. Far in the distance, a roiling orange and yellow sun glowed. Seen from inside our transport, the dead ships floating around us looked as large as continents, their portholes dark, the exposed areas of their decks even darker. It took us 20 minutes to fly through the graveyard, dodging around the ruins of capital ships, sometimes breaking through a fog of litter. Off in the distance, a derelict battleship sat in a clearing like an island in the night. Three rows of flashing lights ran along the underside of the ship, winking on and off in a sequence of red and yellow squares. At the far end of the ship, four flashing blue lights marked the entrance to the landing bay. The hull of the battleship was somewhere between beige and gray in color. An enormous moth-shaped wedge with tears in its skin where torpedoes had struck it.
I don't like the looks of this scow.
All along the side of the ship, tiny dark spots stood out against the gray of the hull. They looked no more significant than slugs crawling on a garden wall. These were transports, clamped to the hull on the ship in regular intervals, 30 of them in all. We flew below one and I stared up at it. No light shone from within the cockpit. The transport looked every bit as dead as the host to which it was now attached.
They look like ants compared to the battleship.
We approached the landing bay, a straight-edged passageway shrouded in darkness. In the dead of space, with the landing pad lights extinguished, the inside of the bay was absolute black. The silhouette of a raven flying across a moonless sky would not have been as dark as the world inside that ship.
COE-1, this is Marine-1. We have entered the battleship. Are the locks open?
Everything is a go. We will seal the locks behind you.
Moving no faster than 10 miles per hour, we drifted into that dark hatchway, our runner lights illuminating small swatches along the runway and walls. This part of the ship was in immaculate condition. The walls, pipes, panels, doors, ceiling fixtures, and other furnishings all in perfect trim. The runway was designed to accommodate transports, but it was wide enough for larger ships. Part of the design included an artificial gravity field in which ships entering this passage were supposed to land. The field had not been restored. Instead of riding the sled system through the locks, nobles had to fly the transport through that needle's eye.
Marine One, the outer hatch is sealed.
We slowly drifted past the first of the atmospheric shields, a massive iron door that weighed multiple tons. Behind it, in a discreet recess, a tiny red light winked on and off. I was glad to see it. It meant that while the rest of the ship was dormant, the engineers had restored power to the atmospheric locks. Nobles pointed to a glowing lever on his flight stick.
Looks like we'll be able to open the doors from in here.
We floated in past all three of the locks and settled onto the landing bay deck. I looked around the empty landing bay outside the window. A world so dark and silent it might have been at the bottom of a sea. The Corps of Engineers had equipped the skids of our transport with special magnetic clamps to hold us in place during our upcoming collision. The magnets came on and locked us into place.
COE-1, we are in place. Repeat, we are in place.
Copy that, Marine One.
Nobles, what's your first name?
Chris, sir.
Short for Christopher?
Short for Christian. My parents must have been religious types.
Must have been. Too bad you never knew them. Do you know how they died?
They died in a house fire.
Prepare for launch initiation. Repeat, prepare for launch initiation.
Shit. Here we go.
General Harris, we set up a video array if you want to follow the operation's progress. They're on the screens behind your seat.
What? When I looked at the back wall of the cockpit, I saw five rows of 4-inch video screens inlaid in the wall. Most of the screens showed a small section of the battleship's hull and a bird's-eye view of cluttered space. The engineers must have placed cameras in the transports along the hull.
That was kind of you.
Looking at the little displays, I realized just how much I wanted to scrub the mission. I felt the jittering in my hands and the throbbing in my temples. Now that the transport had landed and the runner lights were out, I sat in darkness. I was scared already, and soon I would be terrified.
Pull the trigger.
I removed the harness and climbed out of the chair. The artificial gravity drew my boots to the deck, and I walked to the panel of screens. When I took a closer look at some of the monitors, I saw the rear sides of transports in the corners of the screens. The engines were already running. We had started the flight without my noticing. Sometimes that happens in space. Across the cockpit, Nobles busied himself checking systems and flight controls. He flipped switches, read gauges, then turned his attention to the video array I wanted so much to ignore. He settled comfortably, and there he sat, his gaze transfixed.
I'm not ready for this.
Did you say something, General?
No, I'm just mumbling to myself. I can't do this. This is crazy. We need to call this off.
The top screens of the array showed the view from the lead transport drones. The cameras looked out into space, but not open space. A tangle of wrecked warships filled the view, looking as impregnable as a castle wall. Light flared across 30 of the 35 screens, turning them white as an afternoon sun. The nuclear explosion. We'd just shot off enough bombs to destroy a small planet. The heat generated by the cataclysm would only last a moment. During that moment, metal would melt, and bodies. Then the chill of space would return. The flash of the bombs vanished as quickly as it appeared, but it left ghosts on the video screens. 30 of the 35 screens were outside the ship, placed in transports. The other five showed scenes inside the hull of the battleship, the Tool. These screens showed dark corridors and braced walls. Mars and his men had done a lot of work preparing the ship.
I'm not ready for this, Mars. You have control of the transports. Shut them down.
We can't do that, sir. There's already too much forward momentum.
Shut them off.
I had no control over the situation, and that terrified me.
The Tool will still hit Chastity Belt whether we cut the engines or not.
Lieutenant, shut off the specking engines.
Does Ava Gardner know that you're a coward?
I heard the words, but it took a moment for them to sink in. I sat in the co-pilot's chair in stunned silence.
Harris, you're the best-kept secret in the whole Marine Corps. Everyone thinks you're such a badass, and it turns out you're just another bedwetter.
You son of a bitch! You specking son of a bitch! If I get out of here alive...
Ooh, now I'm scared. General Bedwetter is threatening me.
I could not think of anything else but how much I wanted to kill that son of a bitch. Two of the screens in the first row showed the bow of one of the UA ships floating into open space. Strands of blue electricity formed around it, flexing and dancing. And then, in a flash, the section of ship was gone.
You're through the barrier, sir. For what it's worth, I would have resigned my commission before I would have done what you were doing.
What?
You're traveling at a sustained speed of 273 miles per hour. I hoped you would come through at 290, but 270 is within the margin of error.
It took me another moment to realize that Mars had said those things to distract me. Thank you, Lieutenant.
No problem, sir. Go with God.
My blood pressure returning to normal, I turned to look at screens and saw the beginning of the anomaly forming. The electricity of the anomaly was not as bright as the nuclear flare, but it was sustained. It looked like a bubble of light in the darkness of space. Jagged tentacles of electricity reached out from it.
Here comes the dangerous part of the ride.
You'll be fine, sir.
In less than a second, the lightning from the anomaly stretched and overtook the battleship. The screens on the first row of the array showed a brief flash of white and went dead. The screens on the second row showed lightning dancing on the hull of the battleship. They showed transports peeling away from the hull like dried leaves falling from a tree. The electricity ran through the ship like a flood, splashing glare everywhere.